Did you know that proper footwear can elevate your performance? Whether you're a runner, walker, hiker, or just someone who's on their feet all day and needs quality footwear, RTS Sports has the right products to make your activity more enjoyable. Footwear is a vital part of the experience. At RTS Sports, they utilize their 3D foot scanning technology to guide you into the proper shoes for your foot type. Ready to get back on your feet without being in pain? Come see RTS Sports, located in Marion and Paducah.
Welcome back to the Lace Up and Run podcast. I appreciate all of you downloading and tuning in. The show has had more growth than I ever expected, and I'm very thankful and grateful to all of you who are listening. I know that not every episode is going to be for everybody, but hopefully there is something for all along the journey. Today, we are going to lace them up with Dr. Breanne Shulman.
This is Morgan Davis.
Hi, this is Stephanie Page.
Howdy, folks. This is Sean Gossman with Hiking with Sean.
The Lace Up and Run Podcast.
The Lace Up and Run Podcast.
Lace Up and Run Podcast.
Hey, this is Lindsay Roberts, winner of the last Boy Scout Ultramarathon, and you are listening to the Lace Up and Run Podcast.
Do you seriously think anybody actually listens to the Lace Up and Run Podcast? Well, some people listen to the Lace Up and Run podcast. Welcome back to the show. As I just said, we are going to lace them up today with Dr. Breanne Shulman. Dr. Breanne Shulman is a physical therapist, a barefoot training specialist, a running technique specialist, an obstacle course racing and running coach, and so much more. It was a fun conversation. And I hope you take a lot from it. From the PT side of things, we do get into a lot of conversation about various elements, especially when it comes down to plantar fasciitis and shin splints and knee issues. So we talk a lot about that. But as I discovered, Dr. Shulman's main passion seems to be more on the running coach side of things. And I will just read directly from her words. My mission and passion is to create resilient athletes who can train and compete for decades, which is why I do more coaching now than physical therapy. The physical therapy background is a huge contributor to how I coach and create training programs. My clients are obstacle course racers and runners. Many times they start working with me because they are injured and then stay working with me to further improve their performance. And these offerings of Dr. Shulman are available through in person, of course, but also virtually. So you don't have to be from the western part of the United States where she's at in order to tap into her resources. So all of those links will be in the show notes for you to check out and, you know, listen in and hear what she has to say, because there's some really good information that comes from it. If you are new to the show, we believe in an active lifestyle with a primary focus on running and hiking. We cover trail running, road running, ultra marathons, hiking trails, and much more. We provide shoe reviews, gear reviews, running advice, race information, and all other topics to keep you motivated and successful, and hopefully just moving forward. If you have a couple of minutes, take the time to give us a positive review, especially on Apple and Spotify, as it does help the show grow. And you can contact us anytime at laceupandrunpodcast@gmail.com. Lace Up and Run is presented by RTS Sports Running and Hiking Specialty Store. That stands for Run to Succeed Sports, if you did not know already. If you are a runner, walker, hiker, or just someone who is on your feet all day, RTS Sports offers the highest quality footwear, gear, and accessories to keep you moving forward. Visit us at one of our two retail locations in Marion, Illinois, Paducah, Kentucky, or online at runtosucceedsports.com. We're also on Facebook. You can find that at Run to Succeed Sports, Marion and Paducah, and on Instagram also at Run to Succeed. And I say this every week, and eventually I will carve out the time to make it happen. Challenging as always. Soon to be on the YouTube and maybe even the TikTok. I'm not a social media person, folks, so sometimes it's challenging for me to tell myself that I need to do this, but I do know that that is where everybody tends to be nowadays. So we encourage you to shop local when and where you can, and in doing so, you're not only supporting the local business and their family, such as mine, but you're supporting the local economy, which is a daily part of your life. As always, in our race spotlight, we have the Shawnee Hills 100. Shawnee Hills 100 is August 27th, Southern Illinois. It's a 100-mile, 100K, 50K, and half marathon. Don't miss it. If you're available, get out there and get her done. Our friends Stephanie and Laura are organizing that race, and it's going to be a great event. Shawnee Hills 100, you'll find it on Ultra Sign Up, and you can use code RTSSAVE10. That's RTSSAVE10. And also in the race spotlight, and again, I keep, much like the social medias, I keep saying this, but I'm a busy man. I'm trying, okay? Bear with me. As my wife will tell me all the time, because I'm a very impatient person, she will say, have patience. So I'm passing that on now. Have patience. We do have the Wicked Pig Ultra event coming. If you have ever wanted to do the entire River to River Trail course, this is an opportunity to do so in an ultra format. It's going to be broken down over 4 years, and you will cover the entire course. December 10th, it will be under wickedpigultra.com, and I am in the process of building all of that out and getting it going, and I know we're almost through the end of June here, but I'm getting there. So as I said a minute ago, please be patient. With that being said, I just got back from Aruba, so I know it's been a couple of weeks, probably since a Lace Up and Run episode aired, and that is the reason why I was gone on vacation. If you have never been to Aruba, let me encourage you to do so. I learned a lot about it. I had absolutely no idea that it is a desert island, so when you think generally of Caribbean island, this isn't it. So it is, but it isn't. As the Aruban folk like to call it, it's a desert island with a tropical flair. So it still has all of the beaches and the super clear water and everything you imagine when you think about going to the beach in the Caribbean. But all of the mainland is desert. So it's like you've been dropped right in the middle of Arizona. A lot of sand, a lot of dirt, a lot of cactuses, but it had its own beautiful unique way, and there was absolutely nothing wrong with it. The great things about Aruba, it is below the hurricane belt, so they do not get hurricanes. That's awesome. It is very windy. It's usually around 30 miles per hour plus winds. The downside is depending on where you're at on the island, but the ocean current can be a little stronger compared to what you may have experienced if you've gone to any other Caribbean islands. But the really good thing is there are no bugs, like legit none. So you don't have to ever deal with any bugs of any sort, which was nice. And I mean, I'm an old country boy, so bugs don't bother me. But I also went to the Bahamas back in the fall, and the bugs were horrible. So none of that existed in Aruba. It's also a very safe island. It's easy to get around on. It's only 20 miles long and 6 miles wide, so it doesn't take long to navigate it. There's no stoplights. Everything that has an intersection is a little roundabout, so it's easy to travel from point A to point B, and just a really cool experience and a great place to go. Anyway, as I often do, I get on a tangent. We're going to start the show. We're going to be back with Dr. Breanne Showman, and I hope you enjoy.
Grab your glass of 90 proof and get ready. It's time for the Lace Up and Run podcast, the podcast that welcomes all ultra runners, trail runners, marathoners, and weekend warriors. Just don't show up with an empty glass. We give running insight and provide product reviews to make you a better runner. Now, get ready to lace up and run with your host, Tim Jarvis.
Welcome back to the Lace Up and Run podcast. This is going to be exciting because there's a lot of things that I am very interested in or actively involved in with our guest. So I have Dr. Breanne Showman on the phone. Dr. Showman is a physical therapist, a barefoot training specialist, a running technique specialist, and which stands out to me a lot because it's one of my favorite organized events there is obstacle course racing, OCRs. and a running coach. Dr. Showman, first and foremost, how are you? And secondly, how in the world do you have time to do all of that?
I'm doing awesome. And that's a great question. How do I have time to do all that?
You are very active, which is a good thing, a very good thing.
Yes. And I guess luckily what I do for recreation and training and my own competing very much overlaps with my career. So it makes it a little bit more easier on my time.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. So one of the quotes that we use as a business model for us, so you may or may not know, we have Run Specialty. So I own two Run Specialty stores, and then a race company. And then of course the podcast. So all of that kind of ties in as a whole, much like what you just described. But we always use the quote, keep moving forward. So I noticed, throughout your various, websites or web pages or, social medias, you use move better, train smarter, run faster and longer without pain. So that kind of ties in a little bit, but I love the quote because that is obviously what we all strive for.
Yeah, absolutely. And it speaks volumes, I think, at least for me and what I do. And it's really why I became the coach and the running specialist and the barefoot training specialist that I have, because I just learned, like, if we move better and train smarter, we don't end up with all these injuries all the time. And so it really just sums up very nicely exactly like what I do and why I do it.
Yeah. And a lot of so coming from the run specialty side of things, a lot of the common ailments that we hear, I think tie into the training and running, and whether it be OCRs or ultra events or just your local 5Ks. And I would like to touch on some of those here in a little bit, if you don't mind. So I know in reading your bio or your history, I was really intrigued by that because of the amount of injuries that you've had, over the course of, you know, going back to being a high school athlete all the way till now. A lot of that stood out to me, you know, and I'm obviously not going to ask you to break that down step by step by step, but if you could give a history of kind of what you went through and what led you to being a PT, which is obviously what led you into being more of this training specialist as well, which, as you say, is kind of more your focus nowadays.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I started running in high school. I'm a short 5'2", so me playing volleyball was not very likely. So, you know, naturally, I go to cross country. and, you know, I went through didn't have any injuries till my senior year, but then I ended up with a stress fracture, had some shin splints, had, you know, all the normal things, quote unquote, normal things that runners get. And, you know, just being a runner, like, okay, runners get injured, this is what happens, it's part of the process, let's just heal and move on. And so I did, and then college came, and I got injured again, freshman year of track, ended up with another stress fracture, and once again, it's like, okay, this is what happens, and kind of like went through that cycle again, then in PT school, got another stress fracture, and I kind of started realizing, especially as I got into, like, when I started as a PT, I was kind of in that same mentality of injuries happen, people get injured, they heal, we get them stronger, and they go back to doing their thing. And then several years into it, I started just realizing, like, I'm telling the same people the same things over and over again. I'm treating the same things, giving the same cues, getting the same corrections. What if we did move better in our day-to-day lives? And, like, would these things happen? And I started really realizing, like, if we just moved better, if we moved in a more optimal manner, then a lot of these issues that people deal with wouldn't happen. And so it really changed the trajectory of my career from being in the normal insurance-based world, just treating the symptoms, to stepping away from that, going to private pay, because it allowed me to treat the actual cause of the issue, not just the symptoms that were there, and go past that to let's get people more resilient, get them stronger so they aren't getting injured all the time and they can do what they love even better.
So is it fair to summarize maybe to, instead of treating the ailment as it happens, to is what your focus on is to try to maybe train the athlete to jump ahead of the problem before it becomes a problem? Is that kind of what the model is that you've created?
Yeah, that's my ultimate goal. Typically, people come to me because they are injured. And the people that I normally get and love to work with are the ones who's like, they've been through all the normal PT, they get better, they're back in their injury cycle over and over again. It's let's get them past their injury at hand, but also help them understand why this is occurring all the time and how we get it all better. Ultimately, I would love to work with that person before they get injured so these things don't happen. But unfortunately, most people don't think ahead like that. And they just let themselves get injured first.
Right. Yeah. I fall in that category, by the way.
Right.
But for me, for the record, I'm male. So as you know, all males are pretty damn stubborn. So I just fall in the stubborn male category.
There you go.
As we talked about pre-show, some of my medical issues I've been battling already as it is. And a lot of that is stubbornness, not following advice and trying to jump ahead of time, you know. And yeah, it is what it is. But at least I own it. I own the fact that I'm a stubborn man.
Exactly. Hey, as long as you own it, first step.
So you ran in high school, as you mentioned, at 5'2". I won't tell you that my daughter is a volleyball player. She's 5'10". So she's more of, she is more geared towards that blocker on the net than anything else. But, you ran in high school and you obviously that has carried over into your, livelihood, I would imagine. I guess the question is, we're going to get into OCRs, but are you yourself an OCR athlete as well?
I do. I don't do them necessarily competitively. I do them more for fun.
Okay.
Just it's something to get me out of the gym. I've done a ton of road races over the years, and I just kind of got out of that, got into CrossFit. Because I wanted the competitive side. And then a few years ago, it's like, oh, this OCR thing exists. And it melded my running and my CrossFit training really well together. And so I just kind of started doing it just for fun, challenging myself, obviously, seeing what I can do better at all the time. But I typically don't run competitively just so I can just kind of work on my skills on the different obstacles and just kind of really just work to improve myself rather than run it competitively. But yes, I do race OCR.
Great. Yeah. I'm much the same, I guess. So my business model started as a race company. So we were doing race timing for your local 5Ks and whatever's. We got so busy doing that I often found that I didn't have time to go compete in other ones because literally every weekend I was tied up doing timing somewhere. And it reached a point where if I did happen to have an off weekend, I didn't want to spend it doing the same thing that I had been doing, you know, so just from the other side of it. I kind of consider myself, this is going to be a self-proclaim. I consider myself a hybrid outdoorsman. Some people may say hybrid athlete, because I'm involved in so many different things. I do enjoy running. I love to do weightlifting. I love hiking and backpacking and kayaking and just a plethora of so many different things. And I don't record everything that I do on Strava. So a lot of people are like, you have a running podcast, but I never see your stuff on Strava. Well, that's because I don't put everything on Strava. You know, I don't gauge my outdoor activities on what gets posted on Strava. And for those who do, I'm not knocking that. I mean, you do you. But I guess the point that I was circling back to is I have done some OCRs. The last one that I did was the Green Bray Challenge. And from the race management side, to make full circle here, from the race management side that our brand started as, we had put together an OCR event and slash mud run. And hands down, out of all the 300 or 400 events I've been involved in over the years, hands down, the funnest thing I've ever done is not only building out the course and putting it all together, but actually having the event. OCRs are so fun and they're so dynamic and so much involved in them. You know, so when I read all your notes and everything, that completely stood out to me, because the fact that you train OCR athletes as well, because that's my passion. And I guess to not just rattle on forever, because, you know, nobody wants to hear me, they want to hear you. But our property that we have here, so we have almost 20 acres, and we've built a trail through all of it. And along with that trail, I have various obstacles. So I enjoy going out and running that trail and hitting those obstacles. So much like what you just described, just basically doing OCR training without an organized event.
That's awesome. I love that.
Yeah. So that's how I roll. Apparently how you roll too.
Yeah, it's funny that you mentioned the travel thing, because I'm the same way. I'm like, maybe a third, maybe, of my runs actually do I record. Like, most, it's just kind of, I'm just going to go run. Like, I don't care about recording this or timing this or anything. And so, yeah, most of my stuff doesn't end up on anything.
Yeah, I used to care a little bit further, but then I found that I really enjoyed my activities, whatever it may be, a lot more when I wasn't focused on trying to post it socially, you know, just go do it. And like you said,
I agree. I think, yeah. And, you know, to be honest, I same way, I used to post, like, time everything, track everything. And the more I got into the coaching world, or the coaching role, you know, 4 or 5 years ago, the more I transitioned out of that, just because I feel like so many people just like want to, like, every run they want to do faster, and they get all, you know, and it's, everything is very much on like what awards, how much faster did they go, what PRs did they hit, when in all reality it's like, you just, like, people need to take an easy day, they need to, like, do these different things, they need to listen to their body. And yes, there's a time and place for pacing and having things recorded, but I think it's so much more important to be able to just, like, feel out a run and listen to your body rather than always just having a time to focus on.
Yeah, absolutely. And I wonder how often many of those are related to what somebody else thinks when you post it. You know, does, I may be wrong, but, you know, when you post a run that you did a 7:30 pace, but maybe you post a run that you did an 11-minute pace, how oftentimes that gets into the mindset of, you know, well, what are others thinking about that run that I just did 11-minute pace? You know, I'm just arbitrary numbers, but that's kind of my downfall with the social Strava of the world, you know.
No, absolutely, and that's definitely an important aspect to consider, too, when it comes to that.
So you came out of high school, and obviously you made a career choice. You wanted to be a physical therapist. So where along the lines, and I know we've touched on some of this, but where along the lines did you decide that the coaching side of things was going to be something that maybe you were going to redirect to, and where we are now?
Yeah, that was probably about 6-7 years ago is when I just started really getting sick of insurance companies and kind of how much they were starting to control what we could do as therapists. So that kind of was the start of everything. And then just over time, like over another year or two, I just got fully fed up. So I went out on my own just as a PT, not even planning to do the coaching role. And then just as I started seeing more and more people, started getting a little bit more on Facebook and different running groups, and just seeing comments people were making, seeing posts people were making about all these injuries, what they've tried, what they hadn't, how I started realizing, like, how underserved so many people are as far as when it comes to clinicians and coaches, clinicians knowing runners and coaches knowing injuries. And there weren't a lot that know all of them, like all of that. And so I just felt there was like this area that was very underserved in the running community when it came to helping runners be better runners, but also be better runners without getting injured all the time. So that's my, probably about 4 or 5 years ago that I started like really making this transition more to the coaching role, since a lot of coaches don't understand injuries. A lot of coaches don't really pay attention to running technique, to functional movement to proper movements in general. And so, it was around then that I really started just kind of making that transition, realizing I could help people more if I made that more of that coaching transition.
Well, good segue. So I wanted to ask you about, you mentioned movements and techniques. Is there a specific style that you teach with running technique? So there's a physical therapist / chiropractor who's very close to my running store in Marion, who teaches the pose technique. And so I've kind of looked into that based on his recommendation, and I'm assuming you're familiar with that. But what educate me, because I'm ignorant when it comes to this, readily admitted, when it comes to techniques and breathing patterns and all these sorts of things.
Yeah, so I'm actually trained in the pose technique as well. So the theory behind pose, and I shouldn't even say theory because so much of it is research-based, is that the more we can land with that foot underneath us rather than way out in front of us in a heel strike, the less forces we have on the body, the more like a natural movement we have, so we aren't forcing anything to happen, the better balance, control, stability we have. So with pose, it's very much decreasing the forces on the body, helping the natural gravitational forces that are around us help assist the movement, so it's more efficient and less injury prone. With all of that said, the other way, I still do understand, like, everybody's unique, individual, and so I kind of view running technique to a point like we do, like, the golf swing. You watch 10 professional golfers, and as a general, most of the mechanics are the same, but they're all going to have their small little variations based on what their bodies can do. So with running, we do want to land with that foot as close to underneath us as we can, more of a midfoot rather than a heel strike. We want to use that hamstring to bring the leg off the ground so we aren't pushing off our calf as much, because that takes a lot of pressure off the calf, off the hip flexors, off the body in general. And then from there, like, we want to think more about like falling forward rather than like forcing our body to like move forward. So there's like three things that kind of need to happen when it comes to running, but then from there are going to be some individual variations based on each person as well.
So a follow-up to that, like myself, I have a very high arch. So there's no doubt I supinate bad. Or let's say you have that very low arch and you tend to be the overpronator, which is kind of the, you know, those two things usually go hand in hand. It's not 100% of the time, of course, but are there ways, and I know for a fact I'm a bad heel striker, and I've always just assumed that just the cards I've been dealt with my arch type. Are there ways to correct that, I hope you know what I'm trying to ask. So my foot structure, is this what I have to deal with, or can I actually correct that and become more efficient?
Yeah, so from a heel strike direction, yes, that can totally be improved. That just comes from certain drills and teaching your body how to land and feel more comfortable natural landing underneath you rather than way out in front of you. So that can absolutely be corrected through drills. When it comes to a high arch supinated foot, we view that as a very stiff foot. So that is one that's not as, like, how that foot's on the ground, we want to be as more, like, much on our tripod of our foot as we can. Mm-hmm. But depending, like, on a supinated foot, if your foot is really stiff, that can be hard to do. In reverse of that, that overpronated foot, most often that's due to lack of control of that foot. That we can strengthen, and we can teach that foot how to control it better. So with an overpronated foot, we can actually get people out of orthotics, get people out of those real stable shoes by training that foot how to control itself better on the ground.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah. An additional weighted shoes, you know, usually with those, your traditional medial post or your guide rails or whatever, you know, you're adding some ounces to your shoes as well.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And speaking of that, so you're a barefoot training specialist. So the reason why this stood out to me a lot, and I was reading through your biography where you talked about what are they called? Vibrams. Your transition to what you did. And I would love to hear that. But to follow up with that too is, so in my run specialty locations, everything, literally everything, almost to the point that it's kind of like, you're like, seriously, everything is max cushion. Where you're coming from a different approach with the Vibrams or the barefoot training. If we can break that down some, to your thoughts to that, is it a trend in the market right now that everything's going max cushion, or is that just happened to be the trend that's happening where we're at in the Midwest?
I'll answer the cushion thing first, and I'll kind of go my story into the Vibrams.
Sure.
And all that. The cushion, in my opinion, is the shoe company's magic of marketing and having a lot of money to market things. Cushioning, basically, even though like all their marketing, everything, and I used to actually work in a running store. So I know, like, I worked at a running store way before I understood like everything I do now.
That's good. That's a good thing.
So, it's like, I understand how like running stores are trained. Cushioning, even though they say like it helps cushion joints and it's better for your knees, all this, all cushioning does is cushions the bottom of the foot, the end. And what happens in the negative stance with this is the way our foot is designed, there are more sensory nerves on the bottom of their foot than there are in anywhere else in our body except for our hands. What that means is our feet want to feel the ground. When we have a ton of cushioning, what has to happen for our feet to feel the ground is we have to hit the ground even harder than if we weren't in that much cushion. So us hitting the ground harder actually means we have more forces through our ankle, through our knee, through our hip, through our back than what we would otherwise. So
the kinetic chain, basically.
The cushion, yes. So yes, the cushion does cushion the bottom of the foot, but that's all it really does. It doesn't protect all the other joints like a lot of them, the companies say it does.
Okay.
That's my cushion shoe rant.
Hey, that's fine. That's what I wanted to hear. Yeah.
But as you just asked me about the Vibrams, as far as my story with that, I was actually in PT school at the time. I had a bad ankle sprain to the point that it did not stabilize itself through therapy. I actually needed surgery for it. So had surgery, and naturally the podiatrist did what most podiatrists are trained to do. Oh, we need to put arch supports in your shoes because I don't know why, because I didn't go for that. My feet were not having an issue prior to me rolling my ankle, but it's what they did. And I, at that point, was like, okay, like this must be necessary. Like I said, I was in PT school at the time. Didn't fully understand everything yet. So fast forward a couple of years, Vibrams came on the market. My very inquisitive PT self was like, I wonder if these things actually do what they're claiming to do. And so I bought a pair, started wearing them when I was running. And prior to that, if I didn't wear my orthotics anymore, I would have knee pain. So I was wearing stability shoes with my orthotics in them in order to not have knee pain. So I started wearing my Vibrams. Within a few months, I was realizing I had absolutely no knee pain when I was running with my Vibrams. And within a few more months, I no longer needed orthotics or anything like that when I was just on my feet all day at work. So I started realizing getting the foot working like it's meant to work can solve a lot of problems. We don't need to be putting orthotics in people's shoes. We don't need all these stability shoes if we get the foot to work better. So that really started my, I don't know if you want to call it a downward spiral or upward spiral, but the spiral into what the foot actually does, how important it is to everything else in our body, and really, and like what shoes are doing to shut down the foot, what orthotics are doing to shut down the foot, and how all these things are negatively impacting our bodies and how they're made to function.
Where do you stand on like the zero drop footwear? Because I feel like this ties into what you're talking about. Like Ultra, for example, is, you know, the brand that comes to mind, but where it's putting that foot in its natural position, basically. Of course, you know, various levels of cushion depending on the footwear, but their approach is the zero drop natural foot shape. Is that something you recommend, or do you even less than that?
Yeah, I am a very big proponent of zero drop shoes. One thing, I should mention with zero drop minimalist shoes, like any of those transitions from a traditional shoe, you do have to transition to them properly. If you go straight from like, say, a 10 mil drop shoe down to a zero drop, you're going to have Achilles and calf injuries.
Absolutely.
If you go straight from traditional shoes to barefoot shoes, you're going to have lower leg, like you're going to develop tendonitis or issues. So you do have to transition to them smartly. It's just not doing like one day I'm in this, the next day I'm in this, and we're just going to go for it. But if people do the right things to get things strengthened, elongated, everything appropriately, then like getting into a zero drop shoe can be really helpful for the health of the foot and ankle and the body, essentially.
Yeah, huge fan. I love zero drop. I use Ultra on the trail, their Lone Peak model. And I do notice what you said a minute ago. I'll notice where, and I don't wear high drop shoes in general, but usually I'm in that 4, 5, 6 range millimeter. And then I'll, on the trail, I'm a zero. So I even just that small transition, and we're talking millimeters, so it's not a lot, but just that small transition, sometimes I'll feel it in my Achilles a little bit. And then usually as I go, and I guess that stretches out and does its thing, I'm fine. But you know, some footwear, like you're talking about, in that 14, 15 millimeter range, and then you try to transition to a zero, can be more drastic.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I love Ultras. I tend to run in very minimalist shoes. I wear zeros most of the time on the road, but then here in Arizona, our trails are rocky and very brutal and aggressive on the feet. So right. I do wear Ultras to get a little more cushion when I'm on the trails here.
Sure. totally get that. You can be beat up and not want to go do it again, you know? Yeah.
I years ago I ran a Ragnar in my trail shoes, in my zeros. And then I went straight from there to my pose running course. Actually, I could barely function at the pose course because my feet were so bruised.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, all right, we are doing that again.
Ragnar's a bucket lister. So here, I'm from Southern Illinois, and here in Southern Illinois, we have the River to River Relay. So it's an 8-team event, and it's 80 miles long. So it goes from the Mississippi River to the Ohio River. And we always have a blast with it. But almost everybody on our team every year says, you know, this was fun, but we should really look at doing a Ragnar. I'm like, yeah, that's a whole different
game.
They're
fun. Yeah,
they're a lot of fun. It sounds fun. As far as injuries go, since we were kind of touching on that, the three most common ailments I hear almost on a daily basis in the run specialty world, and first and foremost, number one by a landslide, plantar fasciitis. From there I hear about shin splints, and from there I hear about various knee ailments. So do you have any advice to the runner out there on any of those three, on how they can tackle that? And I know we all deal with various, I wish Lindsay was here. I told you in the email that Lindsay was going to join us, but she wasn't able to make it. But I think she's an ultra runner, and she's one of those ladies who goes out and does 80 miles just for fun. And I like to give her a hard time for that because that's just crazy. But I know
my brother's one of those, and I give him a hard time too.
Yeah, as well you should. That's just crazy. But that aside, you know, she's been dealing with some like knee issues and things like that. So I was hoping she could be here to ask you for some advice, but I just threw a lot at you, and I'm sorry for that. But plantar fasciitis is probably the number one most common ailment I hear, and oftentimes I'm not sure if it's actually a diagnosed thing or they just randomly assume they have that, but I hear that a bunch. And then kind of the shins and the knees. And is there anything that you can offer I know we're on a podcast doing a phone interview, but any advice that you can give that would help my listening audience tackle some of those ailments?
Absolutely. Start with the plantar fascia or fasciitis one first. And your comment as far as, I don't know if it, you know, is that true diagnosis. I feel like any pain on the bottom of the foot gets lumped into plantar fasciitis.
Right. That was the point I was trying to make. Not to interrupt you, but that's what I was trying to say. Yeah.
I mean, I've had even in person who's like, I have plantar fasciitis. Like, the doctor told them that, and then I'm looking at them, and I'm like, there's no pain on the bottom of the foot. It's peroneal tendonitis. Like, but I think what a lot of people don't understand, especially if they're just doing their own research, your plantar fascia sits on the bottom of the foot. Between your bones and that are a lot of muscles. So, yes, we can have plantar fascia issues, but we can also have a lot of issues, tightness, things going on in the muscles and tendons that are also in the bottom of the foot. So, figuring out which is going on is going to be part of the key of how to resolve it, because you are going to solve them a little bit differently. With that said, some of the, just as a general, like, things you can do on your own, it's kind of going to be similar between the two different things. Toe spacers are going to be huge for anything that's going on in the bottom of the foot. Most people, their feet are in shoes all day, their toes are really tight, they're scrunched together. They don't really move like they're made to move. If you go back in history and look at people's feet before shoes were even a thing, like, we have big spaces in between our foot, like, you almost think it looks like a really weird foot because of how wide that front of the foot looks. Our feet should all look like that, but they just don't because of shoes.
Mm-hmm.
So toe spacers are huge to start stretching out the muscles. It actually does help stretch out that plantar fascia. And there's some studies that actually show blood flow changes, the increase that happens when the toe spacers are in. So helping to open up that foot can increase the blood flow, helps with the circulation, helps take, like, when we get neuromas or quote-unquote neuromas, sometimes it's just the tightness that's in the foot, so the toe spacers can help with that. So toe spacers are huge for a lot of things that happen in the foot. Along with that, just having a stronger foot can help things. Kind of like I talked earlier, if we overpronate, we can learn to control that. That's going to be key to a lot of things. The more that foot doesn't know how to control itself and we're just letting it, like, aggressively flatten out and stretch and overstretch and get strained, the more problems we're going to have. So if we can do things to strengthen the foot, then we can start, like, resolving a lot of things just on our own. So that's going to be really key with, like, plantar fascia diagnoses, is getting things loosened up and getting that foot to work better. Let's say shin splints. Now, I do want to say there's a couple types of shin splints. We talk about the anterior shin splint, which is an anterior tibialis, that muscle right on the front. And then we also talk about the medial tibial shin splint, which is one more like, almost sometimes feel it's like stress fracture type discomfort, because it sits like right on that side of that bone there. Depending on where it is, changes the cause of it. So that definitely is going to change the treatment of it as well. As far as causes, a big cause of the shin splints on the front is an aggressive heel strike, because there's so much more force that goes to the leg and so much more force needed to control that foot down to the ground. So if they're having anterior shin splints, that heel strike is a huge thing that we want to correct. The other thing that a lot of people don't connect is hip mobility. How much we can get into extension can play a huge role into those shin splints as well. Because if we can't get into a good extension, that lower leg has to compensate, and it's going to change how things work. So loosening up the hips sometimes can do the trick for those anterior shin splints. But anterior shin splints and heel strike are huge. It's a huge cause of that. When it comes to that medial shin splint, usually that's more of like the posterior tibialis muscle, which is hugely important on toe off. That post-tib is what is active fully when we are in that toe-off position. So when I'm looking at that medial tendonitis, I'm always thinking, like, how is that control, like, when they're going into a heel raise, when they're on that toe-off position? Because if they don't have good control there, if there's something that's keeping them from having good control there, then we're going to be flaring up that area. So those are two things to look at for those shin splints. And then I think you mentioned the knee pain in runners, especially with Lindsay going on right now.
Yes, correct.
When it comes to knee pain, here's the fun with the knee, or fun for me, frustration for most of the world. with the knee, it's kind of a puzzle because the way the anatomy is of the knee, it takes on the brunt of forces of something else not working right. So typically, knee pain is due to either something at the foot and ankle not working right or something at the hip not working right. So then it's just a matter of, but that's when, like, you can't have one of those clinicians who just, like, spot treat symptoms, because you're never going to fix that problem. Because with the knee, you have to look at what's going on at the foot and ankle, what's going on at the hip. Are both contributing to the knee issue? Is only one contributing to the knee issue, and really addressing it from that direction. If someone's thinking, you know, I know a lot of, when I talk to people online, it's like, my knee hurts, so I'm doing a ton of glute stuff, a ton of hip stuff. My therapist gave me a ton of hip stuff, a ton of glute stuff, which at the end of the day, yes, it's probably important to get those hips stronger, but we all have to take a step back and really figure out, is that the actual cause, or is there something else going on? So, for me, the fun of the knee is this kind of a puzzle as far as, like, what's causing it, where is it coming from? But it can be really frustrating for the runner if they aren't getting a good assessment to really figure out where in that chain is that breakdown occurring.
So what you're referring to is, like, the kinetic chain, yes?
Yes, correct.
Okay, yeah. I like to use big words. That's all. That's all I meant by that. Sound cool.
Yep, no, you're fine. I like it.
My listening audience will think I'm smart, so.
Hey, that's all that matters.
That's it, yeah. If you can make anybody believe it, that's all that matters. They'll believe it, whether it's true or not.
Exactly.
Exactly. With that, me being goofy, I forgot what I was going to ask you. I tend to do that. That's why Lindsay should be here, because she can stay on track while I refocus. You know, that's typically what happens. I was going to ask you something OCR related. I know what it is. So, I get into the weight training side of the world as well, as I aforementioned. Do you, as part of your coaching, do you get involved with some of the hydration and nutrition aspect of things, or is it generally just involved with, you know, keeping somebody healthy from the physical standpoint as far as, you know, muscles and tendons and so forth?
Yeah, I do get into the nutrition hydration stuff. If there's major things going on, I know some good people who I can refer them out to, but when it comes from a standpoint of making sure we're fueled well enough for our training and our performance, eating things to help decrease inflammation in the body, clearing out things that we would normally eat that are possibly contributing to inflammation in the body, making sure we're getting enough water in, yes, like, all of that is stuff that I do discuss with people, because it does, especially when we're dealing with injuries or the recovery process just after normal workout. The foods that we put into our bodies play such a huge role into how well we recover.
Well, so being that's currently an issue of mine. So you mentioned, make sure we get enough, I swear I'll get it spit out. Make sure we get enough water. Where do you fall with that, if I may ask? I know this doesn't necessarily fall in line with what we're talking about, but are you one of those that's you need this amount of ounces per day, or is this one of the, or do you believe in the, you know, just make sure you're hydrated, or does it vary based on your body weight? slash activity levels. And the reason I'm asking that is from a personal perspective, because that's something that I've struggled with for years now. Is, you know, initially I fell in line with that. They recommend you have X ounces per day, you know, and I was trying to make sure I stayed on top of that. But then sometimes it got to the point where I felt like I was spending more time relieving myself of all that liquid that was coming through my body. You know, it almost became intrusive to my daily life, you know. Or is it based on, you know, this is how much activity you have, this is what you weigh, you know. Maybe I'm rambling and doesn't make sense, but I'm asking personally how much water I should be intaking, I guess.
Yeah, I'm just gonna, the answer to everything is just yes.
Oh, great.
It depends on your weight, depends on your activity level, can depend on where you live. Like in Phoenix, in our dry heat, we need a lot more water than people who live in like Washington State, because it's a lot cooler there. Our bodies are made up of 60 to 70% water. Everything in our body has water in it. So that means we need lots of water in order to support our body. I think it's 3% low on, basically 3% dehydrated, we're already going to, like, our performance in sport is going to suffer. Usually by the time we feel thirsty, we're already dehydrated. So we just want to, like, make sure we're hydrated on a regular basis. Kind of some just very generals. For someone who is not working out at all, like if it's your rest day, getting in half your body weight in ounces of water is kind of the like general kind of recommendations, or at least a starting point. Anytime we work out, we're going to be sweating more. In summer, we're going to be sweating more. So you do want to increase that intake a little bit. One thing you can do, especially if it's around working out and it's in the summer, like weigh yourself before you work out, weigh yourself after you work out. Whatever that difference is the water weight you lost.
Oh,
like,
interesting.
You didn't lose a bunch of fat while you were working out there. So then you know, like, okay, like, I mean, and then during the summer, like, you can legit lose, like, 5 to 10 pounds of water, of sweat, while you're working out. So just having that awareness, being like, okay, maybe I need to be increasing my water intake for the rest of the evening or rest of the day or whatever, can be helpful. And then something with that, too, is when we're sweating, we're not just losing water, but we're also losing all the electrolytes. So your sodium, your calcium, your magnesium, your potassium. So we also want to make sure we're replenishing those. Sometimes when you just feel like I'm just drinking a ton of water and peeing it all out, it's because your body's not actually absorbing it, because you're not getting your, you sometimes need to balance those electrolytes as well. So making sure we're getting some electrolytes in, not constantly throughout the day in all our water, but at least every once in a while can be helpful. And that can be as simple as, like, for me, I'll just do some magnesium powder and some salt in my water. I drink coconut water, mixed in with my regular water when I'm working out. So that gives me my potassium. So like little like changes can kind of help with the absorption of that water quite a bit. So I know that's like very general answer, because it is very specific to like your activity level, where you live, how much you're sweating in your workout, but as a very general, half your body weight in ounces at a minimum per day.
You labeled that very general, but that was one of the best answers I've ever received to that question. So kudos to you.
Oh, well, awesome.
No, great. I appreciate that. I've actually never had anybody tell me that with what you said a minute ago about weighing before your activity and weighing afterwards, and then that difference being your water intake. So that's extremely interesting to me.
Yeah, and it's, I'd have to go back. I'd have to find it again. I used to know the exact amount. I think it's like for every pound you lost, I think it's 8 ounces of water that needs to be replenished. Don't quote me on that, but that's the number that's coming to my head right now.
I am putting that in the show notes with quotes around it.
Brianne said that.
Right. Brianne said. No, that's very interesting. So are you going to be one of those people that's going to tell me, because I know that, and I say this in jest ahead of time for the record, but I know for a fact that, you know, Miller Lights and Michelob Ultras, when they're brewed, there's water. Are you going to be one of those that tells me that that doesn't count?
Unfortunately, that does not count.
Oh, come on.
But I'm not going to be one of those that tell you that, like, if you mix protein powder in water, that doesn't count, because I still count that as water.
Well, that's
but
good.
No, your beer does not count, even though it is fully water.
That's good, because I do the whey protein too. So to know that I can count that, I'm going to take that as a win.
There you go.
Oh, no, that's good. I appreciate all that. Let's get into your podcast, if you don't care. So you have a podcast of your own, and it looks like you've been hammering down on it for a while. You have over 200 episodes. That's awesome in the podcast world. For anybody who does podcasts, will know that that's a good milestone. So the Highly Functional Podcast is where they can find that, yes?
Yes, Highly Functional.
So is that based on basically everything we've talked about today as far as training smarter and being pain-free and injuries and moving and so forth?
Yeah. So my whole mission with it is helping humans become highly functional humans and athletes. So I really cover, I get guests on to cover everything from movement to nutrition to mindset, to like athletes talking about their injury stories. I've gotten a wide range of people on there, and I continue getting a wide range of people on there just because there's
awesome.
So much, yes, like movement is important, but there's so much else that comes into performance and thriving as a human in general than what I talk about and what I do. And my true, like, where I've really taken it is to talking about those things that other people aren't talking about, or breaking down all those myths, because I feel like there's so much misinformation out there. There's so much, like, so many things that were relevant 15, 20 years ago that are still being followed today that really don't work anymore. And so I love, like, one thing I love doing on is just really breaking down a lot of the myths and talking about what's true, what's not, what's effective, what's not. So people can really start, like, even if they don't believe it or don't follow it, like, at least it starts getting people thinking a little bit differently and considering that something different might be true or be out there.
Love it. And I'm assuming Highly Functional Podcast is found anywhere you get your podcasts, like the majority of them, your Apples and your Spotify's and so forth.
Yep, it's pretty much everywhere.
That's excellent. What year did you start it, if you don't mind me asking?
2018, maybe?
Okay. Well, that's the year we opened our running store. Yeah, okay.
I just released, I think, 203 this past week, I believe.
Yeah, 203 is what I have in my notes. Yep, that's... Yep, which is excellent. I mean, that's great. That's great. That shows me consistency. You've been consistently putting out content, and that's awesome. You know, so being dedicated to your passion, you know, is how I see that. So, kudos to you. As a fellow podcaster, I understand what that means. You know, I get it. You know, that's putting out content consistently, and that's fantastic.
Well, thank you.
Yeah. So if you don't mind, that's a segue into my next question. So I have obviously Lace Up and Run podcast. So this podcast is dedicated towards the runner, and it can be your weekend warrior, as I term it, all the way up to your OCR athlete or your ultra running athlete. But as I mentioned, you know, back at the beginning of the show, I'm actively involved in so many different things. And as my wife likes to give me a hard time, I'm passionate about too many things because I get stretched way too thin, you know? So Fair enough. But I have the Lace Up and Run running podcast, and I also have a bow hunting podcast because bow hunting is probably my number one passion in life. But we are looking really hard at adding a third podcast to my regimen that kind of encompasses that hybrid athlete approach that we talked about. So the various, basically anything in the outdoor space that keeps you moving and keeps you active and keeps you healthy slash very positive, that positive mental approach. And the way you just described highly functional kind of reminded me of what I'm getting at, I guess. So if you don't mind, with your permission, I would like to, once we get that going, and that's going to be coming very soon, I would like to double up this podcast and not only air it on Lace Up and Run, but air it there as well.
Absolutely. You are more than welcome to.
Okay, great. So I will send you all of that so that you have it if you so choose. And but wasn't going to do it without you saying it was okay. So.
Nope, I appreciate you asking, but yeah, absolutely.
Okay, cool. Now, being that we are podcasts, so we obviously, from my perspective, we reach, you know, all of my local running club members and the local running community, but it is a podcast, so it tends to reach out a little bit further outside of just the immediate. You have the Get Your Fix website and the Get Your Fix Masterclass, so I'd like you to break that down for me if you don't mind. And I'm assuming they... folks don't have to live in the West to be able to take advantage of your services and your expertise. So how can folks utilize the webs to track down Dr. Shulman?
Absolutely. Appreciate you asking. Yes, and you're absolutely correct. You do not have to live in my area to get my help. I do, most of what I do is virtual work, so I can work with any runner anywhere in the world as long as you have internet. And then as far as me, my website works.
That's a little sticky where I'm at, by the way.
Internet, so.
I am very rural and out in the middle of the woods. So internet sometimes is tricky, but we make it work. We make it work.
Noted. Yeah, so my website, pretty much you can find like how to contact me on there, but the majority of it is for information. I do a blog post weekly. My podcast is up there. Any podcast I have been on, you can listen to that on there as well. So there's just a ton of information on there. It's getyourfixpt.com. There's also a link on there for my race prep masterclass. That is created for my passion, as you can tell, is foot and ankle. That masterclass is created for anyone with a chronic foot and ankle issue that's like not having answers, not really sure why. It really kind of breaks down on a deeper level of what we talked about today, as far as like why these injuries don't go away, what's possibly being missed, what you can work, what you can start looking at. And then from there, if you decide you want to do a free consult, a free call with me, then there's a way that you can do that as well. So if you want to go directly to that, the website for that masterclass is runwithhappyfeet.com.
Awesome. So I'm looking at your website now, and some of these things, I mean, I'm not just saying this because you're my guest on the show, but I'm going to be taking advantage of a lot of this stuff. So I'm looking at running injury resources, 5 ways to end foot and ankle pain, 8 ways to avoid a running injury, dominate your running. I mean, how can you go wrong there? 5 ways to end knee pain. And then various blogs below that with weight training stuff, which is something that I enjoy doing. So it seems like a very valuable resource that you have there that anybody can access for free, right? As far as those articles and so forth that I'm looking at, videos and so forth.
Yep, all of that's free. And then there are a few, if you're on, I do have a few online programs. Those are all paid programs. With that said, you do get the first week free on all of them. So if anyone wants to check any of those out, those are all on the website as well. With links to those. And then I have a YouTube channel. You can look up Get Your Fix Physical Therapy on YouTube. I have a ton of other videos like on pose running and just running technique and, injury information. So you can do a deep YouTube dive if you want with me as well.
I will be doing so because Dr. Blanford has been on me about the pose technique and it confuses the ever-living hell out of me. So I will jump on your YouTube and see what you've got going on with pose because it seems like it's something I need to be doing, but I want to circle back to the very beginning of this episode when I said stubborn male. So I want to jump on there and see what you're saying about that. No doubt. What other social medias can listening audience find you? I know you're on Facebook, I'm assuming, and probably Instagram. And
yes. Instagram, I am the OCR doc. Or if you search my name, Brianne Showman, it should pop up as well.
Love it.
And then on Facebook, I have two free groups. One is the Running Injury Support Group, and the other is Running Training for Obstacle Course Racers or Racing. So either of those or both of them, feel free to check them out. And that's pretty much everywhere you can find me.
Awesome. And make sure you check out the Highly Functional Podcast, wherever you get your podcast. Yes, absolutely. We seem to be in a podcast world right now, and that's a good thing. I enjoy it.
It really is. Like, it's free information. You can listen to it anywhere, anytime.
It is. And I have so many passions in life, and it kind of reminds me of YouTube, where you can go on YouTube and find damn near everything. You know, you need to fix your plumbing issue. It's there, you know, and, podcasts have kind of gotten to that point too, and that's a good thing. That I have so many passions in life, from being a sports fan to being into weights to running to bow hunting, fishing, you know, all the different things that I'm into. There's a podcast for all of that, and I don't even know that I tune into music or radio anymore because that's all I listen to, and that seems to be a trend. So that's it's good. It's good.
Yeah, I'm the same way. I'm like, I turn music on if I've just been like too much thinking during the day. I'm like, I just need something brainless to listen to right now. But otherwise, yeah, like it's like podcasts or something learning related.
Yeah. Brianne, you've been a great guest. I learned a lot. And I hope you'll come back on because I feel like I have notes here that I could go down a lot of different, I don't want to say rabbit holes, maybe a lot of different branches off of the main trunk here that we could dive into that just time constraints maybe not allow. But I would love to have you back on if you're willing, and maybe we can go further explore some of those different topics. But you've been amazing, and I learned a lot from you, and hopefully my listening audience will come check you out. So thank you so much.
Awesome. You are quite welcome. I'm like, I just want people to learn and understand things. So I'm glad that you learned at least if no one else does. And I would absolutely love to take a deep dive into more of these things because I could geek out on this stuff all day.
Yeah. And that shows through. That shows through. So for the record, it doesn't take much to educate me. So let's not use that as the zero for this.
All right.
So everybody check out, go to Highly Functional Podcast. You'll find that anywhere you get your podcasts, much like you found this one. Go to runwithhappyfeet.com. That's where all the training and racing without pain plans may be. And get your fix PT. Getyourfixpt.com is a website for Mrs. Showman. Anything I'm missing? I think I covered it.
Yep.
And on the socials. And check out the YouTube channel. I'm going to be doing that here in a few minutes. So,
yes.
Dr. Showman, thank you so much. You were awesome.
You are quite welcome. This was fun.
All right. Awesome. Thank you.
Unless you're halfway through a 100-mile race or your bourbon glass ran empty, then you're ready to click play on the next episode. Already caught up? Then have your glass ready and join us next week for another epic episode of Lace Up and Run.